Today on Better Call Sexton, if you like it, then you better put a ring on it. But man, once that ring's on it, who the hell gets it back when the engagement ends? This is a question the Osborne family is asking right now. We also talk about whether Hermione loves herself a billionaire just because, or if it's because he's a billionaire, or if it's his like cool name, because it is a pretty cool name. All of this and more. Let's get after it.
Love is dead, Jim. Kelly Osborne and
shit,
her.
I'm out of a job. That's true. Kelly, I can go home then. Great.
Kelly Osborne and her fiance have split up after 7 months of their engagement. I mean,
what chance do any of us have? Look at him. He looks like that Tiger King guy.
He looks like, yeah, he looks like Joe Dirt mixed with Joe Exotic.
Yeah.
He's got a lot going on there. He proposed at the final Black Sabbath concert 7 months ago.
Remember that.
And now they have split up.
Oh.
Kelly is not looking great. A lot of speculation about, you know, maybe some eating disorders issues. She said that she's not eating because she's mourning her father. And now her relationship is in disarray. So a lot to cover there. But also a question that we have not really tackled here. When you split up as an engaged couple, what happens to the ring?
Oh, my God. That is a matter of controversy. How much time do you have? Yeah. Engagement rings, a whole thing. Engagement rings. I have had to go after a lot of engagement rings. I've had to file suits. Finance bros in New York City spend a lot of money on their engagement rings. They really do, especially when they're marrying like models and yoga teachers and things like that.
Well, what's
like,
the rule? A third of your salary? A quarter of your salary?
3 months' salary.
3 months' salary.
3 months' salary, which if you're working for BlackRock or Goldman, that's a pretty big ring right there.
That had to have been a girl who made that up, right?
You can see that thing from space. I don't know. Yeah, some girl was like, what if we tell them it's 3 months? Salary. You're like, they're never gonna go for that. Like, just
try it.
Just tell him.
Just have sex with them.
Say 6 months. Say 6 months. And be like, six. You start with six, and then you bring it down to three. Come on. What is this, amateur night?
It's just a negotiation.
It's 5 months salary. Everybody knows that. See, here's the thing. That's the thing about men. Like, that would have worked on me in my 20s.
If
it was like, Jim, it's 8 months salary. Don't you? Everyone knows that. I'd be like, well, obviously, I know that. Everyone knows that.
Then you hear three. You're like, that's a steal.
This one's only 3 months salary. This is great. Oh, thank God. Which, you know, when I was in my 20s, 3 months salary would have been at least $400 or $500.
I was going to say, you're getting a cubic zirconia.
Pretty
good. Level.
Yeah, you're getting a, please. Yeah. You're getting a CZ without the setting. engagement rings are an interesting area of practice. I've had to get a bunch of them back. The nicest one being $1.2 million.
Wow. See, that is, I think I wouldn't go after it, but if I dropped 1.2, I'm going after it.
At one point, I had like 4 engagement rings in my safe.
No way.
Yeah, we have like a built-in safe, like for passports, children's passports, things we have to hold in escrow. Yeah. We have jewelry sometimes that has to be held in escrow. We once had quite a bit of jewelry, and this is a really secure bolted safe in a highly secured building. But I have to say, I had a bunch of engagement rings, and I once had them like on my fingers like this, you know, and I took like a photo. Yeah, I should have posted it somewhere, but I didn't. It's still on my phone somewhere. Engagement rings are a very interesting thing. An engagement ring, by definition, is a gift given in contemplation of marriage, meaning you are giving it to a person before you get married. Therefore, it is separate property. It is premarital property. It's something that you did not acquire during the marriage. You acquired it prior to the marriage by definition. Now, it's also a gift given in contemplation of marriage. So if the marriage doesn't happen, you have to give the ring back. It was not a gift given to you just like a Christmas present. And by the way, every time somebody says, no, it was given as a birthday present.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he gave it to me near Halloween and it was a Halloween present.
It was Arbor Day.
It just happened to coincidentally match up when he was proposing to me. But wait, the law has recognized that this is a gift given in contemplation of marriage. And if the contemplated marriage does not happen and the person says, I want the ring back, you got to give it back. But if the contemplated marriage happens, even if it ends in divorce, a month later, a week later, 6 months later, 6 years later, that gift is a premarital gift you gave to this person in contemplation of marriage. The contemplated marriage took place. It is their separate property and they get to keep it. End of story.
So, and that's automatic. You don't have to like
that
sign anything.
Law.
That's just
nope. You don't have to sign anything
or whatever.
Now, you can even get more nuanced in this. Because what if it's grandma's stone?
Right. Well, that was my next question.
If it's a family heirloom.
Yeah.
The court system has solved this one, too. There's case law out there that says if there's an heirloom stone that's given to someone and the contemplated marriage takes place. So now we've got a gift given in contemplation of marriage. You get married. So now it's owned as the separate property of the person who received it. But you say, hey, wait, this is grandma's ring and now we're getting divorced. The courts say, OK, give him back the ring, that specific ring, grandma's stone. But you have to give her the value of that ring.
Oh, shit. Well, that's probably not usually that much if it's...
Well, it's interesting.
It could be, but...
Because now it begs the question, and we've litigated the shit out of this on both sides.
Well, I have not seen Jim lit up like this in a while. He loves this.
This is the law geek in me. Like, yeah, I have argued both sides of this issue, and I get both sides of it, and it's so much fun to argue it because it's like it's just such a single issue thing, and it's not at all that nuanced. So I kind of love that kind of argument.
And it's kind of petty, but it
it's kind of petty, but it kind of makes sense. Oh my God, it's the most fun kind of trial. Single issue trials are the best. So you go, I've advocated for both sides of this, but here's where it gets interesting and complicated. Now, I have an heirloom, okay? I get it back. I think that's fair. That makes sense. It's grandma's stone. It's irreplaceable. You get it back. So now you have grandma's stone back. But you have to give her the equivalent of it. Okay, now, is it the replacement value? Is it the saleable value? Which is it? Because as we all know, the jewelry industry and the wine industry, the markup is everything. Mm-hmm. Like, and you, by the way, you can get jewelry appraisals done, but it's usually an appraisal of this, of the replacement value, meaning fair market value. Problem is you can't get a jewelry store owner to tell you, here's what I'd pay for it and here's what I'd sell it for, because they'd be acknowledging their markup. Mm. And the jewelry industry is notorious for making their money on that middle between what they paid for something and what they sell it for. And again, that's part of their business model. But nobody wants to show the world how the sausage was made.
Right.
So you get in this really weird space of, okay, if I've now got to compensate this person for the stone, is it a replacement stone or is it the saleable value of the stone? Because one of those is going to be, the sale value is going to be much, much lower than what it would be to replace it. And does she need a replacement? It's not like this is an engagement ring that she now needs another one of because she wants to still wear an engagement ring. So it's usually, in my experience, courts have leaned towards the sale value, meaning if she sold this, because again, if a marriage ends and there's an engagement, by the way, I have had people come in and say, I want to pay your retainer with my engagement ring.
Wow.
So like, I don't have money, but I have this $400,000 engagement ring. Can I give you this as a retainer? And as a lawyer, I say no. If you want to sell that ring, if you have a right to sell it and you want to then get the money and retain me with that, you can do that.
Well, because my thought, I always thought that trying to sell an engagement ring, they know that, they know what's happened.
Yeah.
And they know that you are over a barrel. And so, yeah. So it's not worth $400,000. It's probably worth $400, right?
No. By the way, there are a number of, just as a side note that's related to this topic, a number of very creative things you can have done with your wedding ring when you get divorced.
Like,
there are services that will make it into jewelry, like cufflinks or anything else. Sure. My favorite, they'll make it into a bullet.
I was just going to say that.
They'll make it into a fireable bullet. So you can go out and you can pop off a cap at a range or at something else with your now melted down wedding ring, or you can wear it as a piece of jewelry. I had a client who had it made into a functional bullet and they drill a hole in it and he has it as a necklace. Yeah, but you can, there are some creative uses for that.
I just put it in a safe. Mine just sat in a safe and I was like, and then she asked for it back and I gave it to her.
I don't remember what I did with mine.
I didn't
keep it.
I
don't remember what I did with mine. Now that I have it to do, like if I had to do over again, I would have done cufflinks or something.
Yeah, I could see you making it like a skull or something like that.
Yeah, like something creative, you know, lemons out of lemonade.
Emma Watson is back in the news after, you know, five years ago, she said that she was self-partnered. And she was on this crusade of like, you don't need a man to be happy.
Could you imagine if a man said that? The guy was like, I'm self-partnered.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, this is really.
And any term to.
I feel like Emma Watson has taken pretension to a whole new level.
Well, she's.
Her episode of Jay Shetty made me go like, oof, Jay. And I like Jay, but I was like, oh, dude. This is, don't platform this person.
She is only going to get more pretentious now. She is now dating a Mexican tech CEO, Gonzalo Evia Balleares.
That's a cool name, though.
Yeah, no, that is.
You know what I mean?
GHB, like, that's, baby.
Yeah, that's a cool name.
And he is a billionaire.
Oh,
and
there's a shocker.
Yeah,
what
you
a
know,
coincidence.
Listen, I don't think she's wrong that, you know, you don't need a man to be to have self value. But when you find one that's a billionaire,
she found
it kind of
a billion
up.
Reasons why it might be nice to have a man. That's good, and I'm sure she was doing okay on her own too. But billionaire money, definitely the Harry Potter people didn't have. Yeah, I mean, look, he's a cool looking dude, and he's got a bunch of money, and he's got a really cool name, and I bet he's got an awesome accent. So I'm all for it. But you know what's funny to me is the number of, you know, sort of self-actualized pro-feminists like all that, who just happened to start dating billionaires or people worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
It's funny,
isn't
it?
Feels like when they go, it's not about the money. It has nothing to do with the money. It feels like that's the female equivalent of when a guy dates a woman 20, 30 years younger and he goes, she's an old soul. She's a very old soul. It's like the you know, it's never been about them. Yes, he happens to be a billionaire.
Just
but
a coincidence.
If he was broke, I would still be very into him. And you're like, that's kind of an unfalsifiable statement and kind of amazing that you would say that without laughing. Because it's kind of nice that he happens to be. Like, I would just once like to hear somebody say, like, yeah, he's got so much money. It's awesome. Like, it's so fun. We get to do the coolest shit. Because he just has so much. He's got, like, private jet money. Like, I had Hermione money.
Nice?
And Hermione money is good money. But that's not some private jet money. Like, this is some good money. Like, God bless, you know? Like, every millionaire wants to be a billionaire. I'm all for it, you know? But I definitely think There's a little bit of Coca-Cola going on there, and she's definitely out there now trying to do the, well, now I'm self-partnered with another person. Mm. You know, we're self-partnered together.
Dual partnered.
Yeah, we're not that typical heterosexual couple. We're a self-partnered duad of autonomous individuals who move collectively through the nature of relationship past the gender binary. Like, really? Because it seemed like you were just like a typical f-ing straight couple. That was what that looked like to me. That's
my personal favorite, and I'd imagine this has got to be in the divorce lawyer circle. This had to have been a hit. The conscious uncoupling from Gwyneth Paltrow. That was an all-timer, right?
Loved it. That was a banger.
Was
I
that
love
like
that.
Them? They
conscious,
came up
they
with
did
that?
Not come up with that.
That
no,
like
there was
a
actually
term?
A book. No, okay. It's not a legal term, but there was a book called Conscious Uncoupling that was about like the good divorce and how to have a good divorce. They made that term
pop, yeah,
incredibly pop. And I think they ended up selling a bunch of books as a function of it. I actually didn't mind that. I thought that it was nice to have a term for a civilized, evolved, friendly divorce.
Well, like divorce has such a connotation, man.
It does, you know, and look, I get it. I mean, I'm a side effect of it, you know, because when people first heard a divorce lawyer was writing a book about relationships, you know, almost 10 years ago now, it was a lot of like, what's that about? Like, because anytime I would tell people, even to this day, if I'm in an Uber or like on somebody's making small talk and they don't recognize me and they don't know me and they go, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm a divorce lawyer. They go, oh, my God, you must have stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know what they mean. Like, they don't mean like, oh, my God, have I got one? So there was this couple and they like were together for like distinct reasons that made sense at the time that they first got together. And then they gradually drifted apart and found that the Venn diagram of things that they had in common was getting smaller and smaller in its overlapping space. But they really did care about each other and the children that they had together and the ties in their extended family. So they gradually just decided, you know, we've moved so far apart from each other that maybe we should end this chapter of our relationship and move to more of a co-parenting situation. And then they both moved on and found happiness in other relationships. He would be like, That's a really boring story. Whereas if I'm like, and then he took the chainsaw and he cut the actual car in half and was like, pick which half you want. True story, by the way. Like, that's the kind of thing that people want to hear when you say you're a divorce lawyer. They want to hear the crazy ass lay down in a courtroom, like wacky shit. It's way more interesting. But there are a massive number of people out there that have very civilized divorces that they don't hate each other. They love their kids more than they dislike each other. Maybe there's hurt feelings and animosity between them, but it's really just about like figuring out, you know, how to divide their assets. I've even had some celebrity couples that, you know, one of them comes into my office and says, yeah, figure out what I have and give her half. And it takes like five lawyers, 6 months to figure out everything this person has because they have complex holdings. They own businesses. They own, you know, points in certain projects that they acquired during the marriage. They own real estate that's appreciating in value and generating revenue. Like, and how to figure out, okay, how are we going to value that? How are we going to divide it? What's premarital? What's postmarital? That can take a lot of time and effort and legal fees, thankfully. But the truth is, it's not a contentious proceeding. It's not that these people hate each other. It's that we're unwinding something that's pretty intricate.
Well, that's why having a prenup always helps.
Always.
Our next segment brought to you by TrustedPrenup.com.
TrustedPrenup.com. Get out there, kids.
Well, The Atlantic wrote an article about micro-cheating.
Oh, yes.
And how we're defining these new types
infidelity.
Of infidelity. And you were saying you went through a modern prenup recently that
involved
this.
Yeah, I just did a prenup where there was, you know, I generally discourage infidelity clauses. For those of you who are uninitiated, an infidelity clause is a clause in a prenuptial agreement that usually attaches a penalty, typically a financial penalty to cheating. The problem with it is, like any contract, is you have to define what is cheating. And the statutory definitions of things like sexual contact involve very specific things like oral to genital contact or genital to genital contact and digital to genital contact, digital meaning hand, not digital.
you have to specify these days.
Yeah,
I know. Because I do feel like this new infidelity means digital, right?
That's the point, is that I recently had a prenup negotiation where the other side was saying, I want a clause that says, if there's any infidelity, there is a $100,000 penalty. And then I said, great, what is the definition of infidelity for the purposes of this $100,000 penalty? And the answer I was given was, any sexual, verbal, or other inappropriate contact with another person. Okay, you could drive a truck through that. An inappropriate contact with another person? Like, how would you define? That's like making the speed limit drive not so fast. Like, okay, what does that mean? Like, you got to give me, like, we think in generalities, but we live in details, and the legal system is all about definitions. So if you're going to say there's a $100,000 penalty for cheating, you got to define the word cheating. You know, is flirting cheating? But if you define it as inappropriate contact, that is entirely subjective. And that is going to be a recipe for litigation. And by the way, the purpose of a prenuptial agreement is to avoid the necessity of litigation. So if you are putting into your prenuptial agreement a clause so intentionally vague that it guarantees future litigation, you're defeating the purpose of the prenuptial agreement to begin with. So it turned into something very complicated because I was trying to make as narrow of a definition of infidelity as possible. And the other side was trying to make as broad of one as possible, even though it was reciprocal, the clauses, meaning either party engages in infidelity. And this is where you get hung up on stuff.
There's a lot of things that you lawyers got to work through.
Family law is never boring, man. You get to like really get caught up in this stuff. Look, the idea of micro cheating, we all know what it means. Like we all know when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, right? And it's not like people don't just dive into bed with each other. It's always like a slow process, maybe not super slow. Sometimes it's pretty quick. It's like that night at the club, but it starts with some non-sexual contact. We all know that. You don't just like trip and land on someone's penis. Like it's usually there's some connection that you go, hey, I know that this probably shouldn't go further than it's going. And the question is that the cheating or is that the prelude to the cheating? And do we wait for the fire or do we say the smoke is something we can penalize you for? Personally, I think penalizing the smoke is very dangerous. Even penalizing the fire, I don't think creates any real disincentive. Like, I can't imagine someone who's considering cheating and then goes, ooh, if I get caught, there's potentially a penalty. And by the way, if that's true, how much is enough? Because, like, you know, if the right person was like, I could pay $50,000 to have that. Like, it might be worth it. You know what I mean? Like, it depends on what you make the penalty clause and how much money the person has. If I'm worth $100 million, I got to pay $100,000 to cheat on my spouse. You know, you might go, hey, I'll spend that $100,000. It's worth it. But, you know, it really is such a weird relative thing. And by the way, would you want in your relationship, like this is not to get, you know, back into the inside the manosphere thing, but one of the things I find kind of curious about that idea of like a forced monogamy. Because really what you're saying is, I want you to not cheat on me because there's an economic penalty, as opposed to, I would like you to not want to have sex with people other than me. Like, I think in its ideal permutation, when you're in a monogamous relationship, you're having sex with as many people as you want to. That number just happens to be one, but that's as many people as you want to. I would not want to think that my partner isn't cheating on, they really wish they could, like they really want to, but they don't want to get in trouble. Like that does not give me any comfort at all. So I think what you want is a partner who's going to say, yeah, I'm not hungry because I'm full. Like I'm good. You know, I'm happy. And I think that an infidelity clause is just an invitation to like, why is this person not cheating on me? Is it because of an economic penalty? Or is it because they genuinely love me and are satisfied in our relationship?
Another hoop that you divorce lawyers have to jump through, apparently these days, is kids' activities, according to your colleague, Gus Demopoulos.
Gus Demopoulos, amazing lawyer, by the way. Give him a like and a follow. He's on Instagram. He's trying to build some traction on things. Gus and I met some years ago, not in a courtroom as adversaries, although we've been since. We both were presenting in a continuing legal education seminar for the New York State Bar Association on evidence. And he was doing this very nuanced thing about like subpoena power. And he is just a brilliant lawyer, like a brilliant family law attorney in the most like academic and cool way. Plus, he's really good in court. He's got a really solid demeanor. He's liked by his colleagues, even when he's beating the crap out of me in a courtroom and I'm beating the crap out of him.
Dude, Jim Sexton saying that someone is a good divorce lawyer is like MJ saying you can hoop.
Yeah, no, let me tell you something. He can ball. He knows what he's doing. Game recognized game. Gus is one of those guys you bring your A game if you're going against him. Gus, John Titler, there's a list of people that I look at and I go, yep, that guy's got the special sauce. You can't teach that. And Gus is one of those guys. But yeah, Gus on his page recently was talking about, we can run the clip, but it was basically just a discussion about how people weaponize and get into issues about children's activities. I thought it was great.
The one major shift in strategy in divorce and custody litigation I've seen over the last couple of years, believe it or not, is the overwhelming rise of conflict over kids' activities. We're seeing conflict over what sports, how serious to take them, whether or not a child should be in a competitive team, whether or not they should spend that eighth hour at violin training.
It's wild.
Competitive youth sports and activities is really finding its way into the cases in that it really comes down to major personality differences in parenting methodology, but it finds its way into simple and silly things like, should Johnny or Sally play on the second lacrosse team?
And this is after like divorce has been initiated.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's
still
even
after the divorce is over.
Right, right.
Like it's a way to, I once thought about writing a book called How to Torture Your Ex-Spouse. Because it's not like people are going to try to torture their ex-spouse. The problem is most people do it in ways that immolate themselves in the process. Right. And there are ways to torture your ex that don't immolate you and that you have plausible deniability. And this is one of them. This activities thing, because there are now so many competitive leagues, travel leagues, that you can sign a kid up. Or before you even, if you have joint legal decision making, so neither of you is allowed to unilaterally enroll a kid, you just say to the kid, oh, do you want to do this team? You know, if dad says it's okay, you can do it. And now the kid wants to do it, but it's going to be every weekend. You have just taken your co-parent's ability and autonomy away. Mm-hmm. Like they now on the weekends. And by the way, when you go to court, I've made this argument on both sides. And I have to tell you, when the guy walks in and he goes, she signed the kid up for this league where every weekend, and I go, you know, Your Honor, I'm sorry that visitation requires him to parent.
Oh,
I'm sorry
shit.
That the children are not scrubbed and brought to his tent so that he can do whatever it is he would like to do on any particular weekend and the children don't inconvenience him and his new girlfriend. But the reality of parenting, I think we all know, Your Honor, is that children engage in activities. That's part of growing up and being part of their peer group. And, you know, those drives to and from practice, that's an opportunity to engage with your child. And if you're actually interested in parenting them, instead of just sitting them in front of an iPad and ignoring them while you talk to Kiki, your new girlfriend, you know, like, and by the way, like, I've now made this guy sound like a fucking villain. And really all he's saying is, wait a minute, like, I got remarried. She's got a custodial rotation. I've got a custodial rotation. We worked hard to make the match up, but now I got to take my kid to a 2-hour drive to do a travel league for a sport they're only vaguely interested in. They're not going to ever be an MLB player. They're 5'2". Like, it's not going to happen. So what are we doing here? And like, I just had one with dance class. Where these two girls decide, their mom said, I want them on the competitive dance team. And by the way, dad, who I represent, when he would walk into the dance studio, all the moms had heard mom's version of the divorce and were all, he was iced out.
I'm sure.
So it was a lonely time on his weeknights.
Damn.
But she signed the kids up for this competitive dance team. And by the way, these were not two kids that were ever going to be competitive dancers.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is you know, he got some. And by the way, the price list that you had to do, I was so glad I didn't have daughters when I saw this price list, because it was
thousands of dollars, dude.
Just the uniforms, the jackets, and then you also have to do a bake sale and a fundraiser.
9 a.m. to 9 p.m. competitions on Long Island and New Jersey.
It is. And could you imagine, like, that level of trip? Like, I hated having to get up from one room to the other for my children, much less drive to Parsippany. Like, nope. Like, there could be a funeral of an immediate family member. I'd be like, where is it? No, that's way too far. Just said, can I come by Zoom? Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Well, how old do kids have to be to get in Ubers? When can I start sending them in an Uber?
I've actually litigated that issue.
Is there an answer?
I argued that it was nine. It was I was persuasive. The judge agreed.
I'm not putting a nine-year-old in an Uber. What about an Uber Black?
That's a high caliber. Come on, you got tracking tools. It's got video.
It wasn't a Honda Civic. Come on.
Come on. Are you kidding me? Is there a racial component to this? What's your issue
Anti-Islamic hate?
What's going on over there? I don't want to know what's happening. I apologize.
There will be a retooling.
There will be a retooling of this show before you know. You turn it on next week. It's like you just hear some woman be like, all right, Jim. So today's story. What just happened?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, man, it's rough. It's rough out there. These are the things that as a divorce lawyer, you end up litigating. What age can a kid go to an Uber by themselves? What age can a kid take the subway by themselves? Yeah. What is the definition of Thanksgiving for the purposes of visitation? Is it Wednesday through Thursday night, or is it Wednesday through Sunday?
Thank God you do that, because that sounds terrible.
Dude,
to me,
I have people who spend $50,000 on that. I'd eat turkey another day. I don't care. You'd have them. Like, but there's, if you got a couple billion dollars, you know, what the hell? Litigate it.
We got to wrap up here. But, you know, I'm always trying to think of different ways to make money with this operation.
Really appreciate that.
You writing... I guess like a membership only access to how to torture your ex-spouse.
Okay.
You could charge $50,000 a pop for that one.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of sick fucks out there.
Well, now if you turn out there's a Patreon all of a sudden, or there's like a private channel, you'd be like, all right, gang, here we go. Lesson number one. Here's how to torture his girlfriend. Here's how to torture her boyfriend, you know? Yeah. No, listen, you want to know how to break the rules. You know,
talk to them, make the rules. Yeah.
Listen, a lot of lawyers, like, we're the most qualified on, like, you got to learn the law so you know how to break it, you know? So we're qualified to teach you. We don't have to use our powers for good. Gang, that's going to do it for today's Sexton Show. I got to get out there and try to find myself a billionaire. I don't care what he looks like. Let's do it. Get myself a ring and I'm going to keep it. But thanks for joining us. Remember to like and subscribe. Hit the notification bell. We are getting so close to 100,000 and it's all thanks to you. And we appreciate every single one of you. I know that from the bottom of our hearts. Remember to go to NYC Divorce Lawyer at Instagram, sextonshow.com. Give us your feedback, segment ideas, record a video for us to future air on one of our segments. But for now, we're adjourned.